Yes, thank you, guys. That brings us to item D2, regarding a request to amend stormwater volume control provisions. I think I might go straight to Ken Ryder. Ken, if you would come up and explain briefly what your request is and why you're making it.
Thanks for your time tonight. In your packet is a proposed amendment to the land use ordinance to address some of the recent stormwater requirements that were approved in June of earlier this year. If you recall, there were two components that were changed. One was adopting the Jordan Lake rules, and then there was a special Town of Carrboro provision that got to controlling volume requirements. And without going into kind of the technical detail, as it relates to Shelton Station and projects that are kind of urban infill or have a large amount of impervious surface for redevelopment, the discussion and analysis that was done when the volume requirements were passed anticipated some further revisions and refinement. And as folks would probably recognize, the first project out of the chute usually figures out how those ordinances might impact them. So our rezoning was, as you know, we went through a lot of time and effort back in January to get the property rezoned. And then through the process of doing our conditional use permit, these new ordinances were adopted. Well, based on the redevelopment plan that we had to redesign the entire stormwater system to try to come to not only addressing the Jordan Lake rules, which we had always anticipated back in January, but this new volume requirement that got to controlling the volume of runoff off the site was something that we had to go back and have spent a lot of time and money trying to basically redevelop that. So we have a requirement that based on the economic feasibility and a lot of the other components we're trying to meet being green and LEED and sustainable, having our affordability requirement, trying to meet some affordable office components of of the marketplace. There's an economic component to this where we just can't an economic argument. We just can't really physically or financially put more design requirements on the site. So one of the things that we're looking for right now is some flexibility in determining what the exact stormwater requirements need just to be for the runoff. We do meet the Jordan Lake accounting rules, and then also try to balance that with some of the other things. So essentially, we're trying to identify some flexibility in the stormwater requirement so that we can maintain some of the other requirements that we were obligated as part of the conditional zoning for the property. So we've identified a number of best management practices, some that were not even adopted by the state, and we've incorporated them into the site plan to try to get there. And we get very close, and there's a lot of estimating and judgment that's made in how these models work so you can meet the requirements. So the actual ordinance is pretty rigid. It's either a yes or a no, it's very technical at some point. We're looking for some flexibility for the board to basically say, well, this meets the spirit of it, but not exactly based on the ordinances there. So we're trying to figure out how to best move forward. I think after talking with town staff and the town attorney, there's probably other ways to go about it, but we've proposed an amendment that would at least allow for some flexibility in administering those requirements.
Ken, what's the urgency on this from your standpoint in terms of adopting, say, the ordinance you've come up with tonight, or as opposed to giving staff more time to evaluate options?
For Shelton Station, right, we've been at it for a very long time, so we're trying to continue to move forward through the CUP process. And I think we meet the requirement very close, but at the letter of the ordinance, we don't. The reality is we haven't looked at, I think town staff looked at about three or four other developments. So, I want to be careful not to prescribe a solution just for this project. I mean, I think there is probably some more technical analysis that could be done. So we proposed a very kind of broad and general modification to it. To basically allow a variety of projects to be kind of interpreted that way. But for our for Shelton Station in specific, it's really just we've been at it for over 2.5 years, so we really do need to keep on moving forward, and we've got some contractual obligations that we need to meet.
So what kind of time frame would you be looking at for it not to be, you know, particularly damaged by, you know, if this gets delayed?
Less than 60 days would be my preference.
Okay.
So like the January public hearing date, I guess, is what that amounts to, or what you're asking for.
That would be very helpful.
I'm not sure which of you had your hand.
Michelle. I have a question. It might be for staff, and it's for us to consider. You all in the report are 6% over the runoff calculation. That's correct?
That's correct.
And so I'm wondering if we pass something that isn't specific enough, and 6% is different here, I think, than it could be at a different another project. I'm just wondering if we need a range. I'm not suggesting that we pass the ordinance either. I'm just wondering the implication of saying 6% is okay here, knowing that 6% is different somewhere else. Is 8% okay? Is 10% okay?
Yeah, they're all just numbers. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's why I'm thinking that if it was for an upcoming public hearing, that the choice two that allows staff to prepare an ordinance with flexibility, that's something that we can then consider as compared to what Ken's come up with. I'm sorry.
Lydia?
Well, I guess in my what I was going to say was kind of along the lines of Dan, but I was going to also ask if our attorney, if Mike, had a chance to look at the proposed ordinance, and if you know that, I mean, it seems to make sense that I'm sure there's something we'd rather incorporate into that, but if you had a chance to look at it.
I have, and that's one approach. I mean, this approach is sort of consistent with the our parking requirements, which basically say establish a presumption of so many spaces, but you have flexibility to vary that. That's one way to deal with it. The other way to deal with it is to draft something which we already have something in the ordinance that provides that if in the context of a CUP application, during the period of the application after it's filed and before it's acted upon, the ordinance changes, then the board can conclude that it doesn't need to apply that ordinance to that project. That provision doesn't help in this circumstance because the change took place after the rezoning but before the CUP application. So another alternative is to amend that section to say that you just exempt a project that basically just to say it, to add conditional use or conditional rezonings to the list of circumstances under which if a change occurs during the pendency of that process, the board could essentially decide it wouldn't apply the provisions. So those are two different ways of dealing with the same issue. This provides more general relief for other circumstances where a claim could be made or a proposal could be made that would vary the requirements of the ordinance, again, like the parking. Or the other alternative is to do something that would basically just allow for the exemption of a project in this circumstance, but would otherwise not provide that flexibility. Mm-hmm. So it's a long answer to your question. Yes, I have looked at it. Yes, that's one way to go. It probably needs some tweaking. There's another way to go, or no way to go at all.
And just a quick follow-up to that. Sure. And the other, I noticed that Ken was, or maybe we were suggesting January public hearing, but I noticed that staff in our packet is suggesting a February public hearing, so I guess I just wanted to comment from staff as to whether January would be possible or if it needs to be February. So,
thanks, Tina Moon, the Planning Department. The timeline was suggested based on the getting things to the advisory boards, the typical process of getting things through.
Yeah. Jackie and then me.
Yeah. I'm if it needs to go to the advisory boards, I think that that's an important part of our process. I kind of am not in favor of making a lot of exceptions because, as with other things, if you make an exception for one, then I guarantee you that we are going to have other developers coming in and asking for the same exceptions. just like we have with other things with this project. And I believe that when your project has an impact on the community, you're responsible for the impact, whether that's parking or whether it's water. So if 6% of the water is exempt, who's responsible for that 6% of the water? The rest of the community is responsible for that 6% of the water. And if we say, for one, you're not responsible for that whatever percentage is, then the other developments, and we have many that are going to get started really soon now that the economy, hopefully, is turning around, they're all going to ask for that exception, just like they're all going to ask for the other exceptions that we've made. So we make rules, and we either change the rules. This rule is an important rule. It has to do with our water. And we've talked over and over again about how much this community has sacrificed for the quality of the water. So I'm not even in favor of moving forward with it. I think making exceptions means that other people then bear the responsibility of your actions. And that becomes a financial burden to the rest of the community to one degree or another. And it opens the door for other people to ask for the same exceptions. So I'm not in favor of that.
Let me ask the planning staff, someone on the planning staff, to address this question, which is, obviously it's Ken Ryder who's making this particular request, and he's obviously doing it because the current rules are proving difficult to meet, or maybe essentially almost impossible to meet for his particular project. But I guess what I'm wondering is, does this ultimately amount to a problem with the rule, or does it amount to a problem with the project that he is trying to build? That is say, is it, because what I'm picturing is, or what I'm concerned about is, are other people who would like to do downtown redevelopment projects in the future facing basically the same problem? Okay. I mean, clearly they're facing the same burden from a technical point of view, but, how achievable is the standard that we have set? That's really the question I'm asking.
Sure. Well, I think as you mentioned in your comments and staff mentioned when this ordinance came forward in June, we do anticipate that there very well may be a need to come back and make some minor modifications. In this particular project, my understanding from the environmental planner, we spoke about this project this morning, was that they, in fact, are really quite close. And one of the questions which I think remains to be answered is what will be the Jordan Lake value for pervious pavement, and that you've estimated what may turn out to be a low figure. So I think you've estimated about 40% to 50%. Some other projects who are in a similar process now have estimated a much higher percentage, and we're waiting for the committee reviewing the Jordan Lake rules to come up with what assessment they will give for permeable pavement. Should they go with a higher percentage, this project may be fine. Should they go with 50% or lower, there may be some need for some additional stormwater management devices, maybe an additional bioretention pond, something of that sort. It may also be the percentage is from what I gather, is so small that it may be something that is okay for the CUP approval and could be resolved through the construction plan process. So it isn't a matter where this is such a big burden for this particular project that we really need to think, oh, we've made a huge mistake with this amendment.
If I can comment, Mark. I mean, a lot of the, if you remember the discussion we had about the rezoning and the different features that we have, so a lot of the green and sustainable features about having a permeable pavement in the parking lot, having bioretention, having irrigation and reuse of water, those are all things that we've implemented, and those get us close to the requirement. Essentially what happens, and I'll do just a very quick, you have a certain amount of runoff calculated on your site, and then you're limited on how much more runoff you can have beyond that. What Tina was talking about is permeable pavements. How much credit do you get for permeable pavement? How much water actually gets absorbed and does not run off? Mm-hmm. And it's the state doesn't have requirements yet of how to calculate that. We've made an estimation of what that is. Moving that a few percentages would probably absorb much of that 6,000 cubic feet of volume that we're talking about. So there's just uncertainty, one, with the, you know, how the ordinance will be implemented, and also just some of the technical analysis that goes into the calculations. So I think the result is right, that the ordinance is resulting in the types of stormwater best management practices that the town wants. It's just really kind of a technical conundrum of how do you move forward with something when it doesn't meet it. So what we proposed is really a stormwater requirement of flexibility versus what Mike talked about, which was kind of, well, we really want to be grandfathered under the old rules. I think we're trying to do the right thing by actually putting in place the actual features that get the right result. We just can't get there without expending exorbitant amounts of money beyond what we've put in there. I think most people would say it's a pretty aggressive stormwater management system for the type of project that we're putting in place.
Sammy, and then let's try to figure out what we're doing.
So I hear, like, I agree with Jackie, I agree with Mark. I do think that once we start making exceptions, we right off the bat start eroding. But I also heard staff early on saying that we may have to tweak. So given that there is no established credit for stormwater for permeable surfaces, maybe as a town we could assume that standard and then once those rules happen, then we can adjust accordingly, less or
conform
more.
To whatever
conform
they are.
To whatever they are. Hmm. And I think that would acknowledge the fact that you are so close, that this is the new rule, that we are testing it out, that you happen to be a developer that is in the crosshairs of the testing of it, and recognizing the fact that you have done a lot of positive environmental things on this property that I think we should reward. I'm glad that it isn't to the extreme where we have to rework the whole ordinance, and that this would be signaling a more fundamental issue. But I think that may be one way to go forward.
Michelle,
when is the committee going to come back? Do you all have a sense of when the committee is going to?
When the state is going to come up with a number?
I kind of got the impression it was any time. Is that yours?
Well, I think it's any time since October. So yeah. It's overdue, I think.
But although any time does mean any time.
May I just make one statement in response to your question, Mark, which is about how downtown development in general is affected by the regulation. And for the most part, the downtown is fairly developed. You know, that is to say, there's a fair amount of impervious surface there already. This particular property, you know, the Shelton Station property, it was four lots that make up the site. You know, it's really relatively undeveloped. I mean, there are two houses on it. Or there were two houses on it, you know, initially. Now there's one. And otherwise, there's a lot of, you know, undeveloped pervious surface. So its characteristics are somewhat different. And so the effect of the volume control provision, because the pre-development, you know, amount of runoff and the post-development runoff changes significantly with the amount of impervious surface being added to the site. So it is sort of, you know, and often it's good. Mike always says that, you know, we do get a test case in the door that does really challenge your ordinance, and he has a term for that. I can't remember what it is at this moment, but you know, but it is sort of almost a worst case scenario.
The meat grinder.
Anyway, so it is somewhat different from many of the properties in the downtown. And we have tested it on, you know, we did run the Jordan Lake accounting tool. Well, actually, we had an applicant run it on another downtown site, and it's a significantly different outcome for that site. But that's partly the situation. So,
well, can I make the suggestion that I mean, I guess I'm willing to hear about some. I agree that it's sort of problematic to grant an exemption, but I'd be interested in hearing about some revisions to the ordinance that the staff might draft. I don't know how I would vote on them. I guess it depends partly on what they are, but I'm willing to have a public hearing about that. But we need to wrap this up for tonight because, you know, this is a very technical topic and we don't have all the information really in front of us. So,
well, I was just going to say that it sounds like we, at least from what Dan was saying and Sammy, that the number two, the asking staff to prepare an ordinance that provides some flexibility is at least where we are today. And I think Sandy's
so can you characterize that as a motion?
My wasn't necessarily flexibility, but establishing that standard until we actually know. Because I am afraid of the erosion aspect.
But we may not. I think we need flexibility until the Jordan.
Right, okay, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
As a sort of interim provision.
Right, exactly.
Okay, all right. I like that motion. Is there a second?
And then that would refer to EAB,
I'm assuming that would be for a February public hearing.
Randy, I just want to...
Yes.
Regular.
I would like for staff to understand and I hope that's part of what you're proposing, that they come back to us with what that standard might be. And or if the Jordan Lake rules are clear on that, then what that is. That's what I mean by it. I don't necessarily favor flexibility that will just...
No, I think
okay. Sort of broad long-term flexibility in the ordinance was not what the motion was,
right,
from what I understood.
Cool. But it gives us some breathing room between now and...
That makes some sense, and the public hearing may be obviated depending on what the state does in the interim. So
yeah, and just to be clear, there's we meet the Jordan Lake accounting rules. It's really about the town of Carrboro volume runoff, the volume ordinance that deals with runoff. That's where the difficulty is. I mean, we've always been planning to meet the Jordan Lake accounting rules, but it was that new ordinance that really made it difficult to get there, but even though we're close. So just to be clear, I don't think we need to revisit the Jordan Lake accounting rules.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
So I think that's...
All right. Very good. We need to go ahead and move on. So it's been moved and seconded that we schedule a February public hearing on the possibility of some flexibility up until that point where the state has decided about impervious surface or semi-permeable surface rules. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed?
No.
The matter passes 6-1. All right.
Thank you.
That brings us to a request to set a public